This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio.
Welcome back. Next, we follow up on the Auditor General of Ontario's report, which was released just as we went to air yesterday. Among the highlights, a critique of this government's climate change plan, saying it will not make Ontario achieve its emissions reduction targets. And on the healthcare front, a lot to worry about. Of the 1 million patients who are discharged every year by hospitals, about 67,000 were harmed during treatment, and that is the second highest rate of patient harm in the country. We already covered some of the problems in nursing homes and food and nutrition in the homes, the most stomach-turning example of which was residents being served eggs that were 3 months out of date. We will get to all of that. Right now, I'd like to welcome Ontario Auditor General Bonnie Lissick. Hello.
Hi. Thank you for inviting me on.
Thank you for coming on. In your opinion, out of all these value for money audits, what deserves or needs the most urgent attention?
Oh my goodness, it's hard to narrow it down to one. I think there's a lot of reports that tackle issues that require attention. Just quickly, obviously, long-term care homes always deserve attention because they're housing people that, can't always help themselves. The ODSP program is paying out money that we think is to people that, you know, aren't eligible, and that needs to be looked at to save the province money and to put the money where it's needed, and people that actually need it for ODSP.
And, do you have a figure on that, how much money could be saved?
Well, we know that there's been overpayments over the last few years of $1.1 billion. We also know that the financial eligibility, confirming it with third parties, isn't being done on a regular basis, and so there are opportunities out there for people who are receiving money to be receiving it when they have other sources of income. The increase in ODSP is because of psychosis and neurosis. That percentage of people with that is increasing, and they're not being regularly reviewed to see whether or not they're still entitled, and there are treatments for that now. So there's a lot of factors that play in. So the program monies went up a couple billion in the last 10 years, and so it deserves a look.
In terms of the problems that you found in long-term care homes and nursing homes, now you didn't name the nursing homes. Did you look at an equal mix of profit, for-profit and not-for-profit homes?
Yes, we looked at municipal and not-for-profit and for-profit homes. So my staff visited all three types of homes in Ontario.
And did you find any significant differences in the kind of problems you found among those three categories of homes?
The problems were more to do with, there's a lot of one-offs, and also, the building in which long-term care facilities are being housed. So some of the facilities are, newer by comparison. The older ones don't have as much room for, more comfortable dining, and we did see seniors dining in the hallways. Spending on food might be a little bit higher in the municipal than it is in the others. You have to pretty much go long-term care home by long-term care home. It is hard to generalize across the board.
We talked to Lisa Levin from Advantage Ontario. Most of these problems didn't surprise her. We cover long-term care issues all the time, and one of the consistent problems is there's not enough staff. They are asking for 4 hours per day per resident. They can't always find the staff, and a lot of the problems that you cited seem to come down to that.
I think what was interesting when we started this audit was looking at the data, and it's, you know, the number of residents in long-term care homes hasn't changed much from, let's say, 10 years ago. 77,000 people are roughly in the homes. It's gone up a little bit, but, you know, let's say 75 to 77,000. The average age has stayed the same, about 83 years, but what has changed is the cognitive ability. So most, 64% of the residents now have a form of dementia, such as Alzheimer's, which thereby requires more assistance with feeding and drinking. And so that's where you run into the issue of, is there enough time spent with each resident?
Yeah, frankly, I was surprised by that, because I've seen other numbers that said the average age has actually gone up. But there's no question that there are more residents with dementia, and that's also another issue, because that requires specialized training, and all of this, of course, requires money.
Yeah, there's a budget that everyone is working within, and I think what we saw that maybe throws the system off sometimes, and it's obviously going to happen, but it's the use of agency staff sometimes instead of regular staff, and when staff do phone in sick, some jobs, when you phone in sick, things can carry on as normal. In this particular, you know, in terms of PSWs, if somebody phones in sick, that just means there's a pair of hands missing to help, you know, help with somebody's attention in terms of food and dressing and all of that.
And agency staff, of course, are more expensive.
Agency, yes, and also not as aware of the residents' needs. And, you know, we go into care plans, and in those plans it talks about the food that people need and the texture of the food and the beverages. And we could see that in a lot of cases there isn't referral back to those plans. And so there are some best practices out there. If long-term care homes can share their best practices more, that'll be good, because one of the best practices is actually put the care plan right on the table where the person usually sits, so that no matter which staff member or an agency staff looks at, helps with that person, they'll see what they need for their meal and make sure they don't get solid foods if they need pureed foods.
That sounds like a no-brainer. A couple of things. When you talked about the never events, you know, leaving instruments inside patients, that kind of stuff, and it not being reported. I mean, we just a couple of weeks ago had a report on that from CIHI, from the Canadian Institute of Health Information. And so why is there such a big rate of harm to patients in Ontario?
So there's two things there. The CIHI reporting is on reportable incidents and preventable reportable incidents. Never events are things that should never occur. So that type of information isn't really collectively collected. So when we went to the hospitals, a sample of them did collect that information and others didn't. So what we're saying is the never event data should be collected by all the hospitals and reported to the ministry to make sure that those things don't happen. The biggest one isn't the instruments. The biggest one is ulcer pressures, so that come about perhaps if a patient isn't being regularly moved, if they're more immobile. So pressure ulcers is the key one there.
Okay, final very quick question about nurses who had been fired or disciplined for incompetence or inappropriate behavior getting rehired. I mean, that to me rings a bell of those terrible Elizabeth Wetlaufer murders. How often is that happening?
Well, we looked at the movement of nurses in a sample of the hospital. So we didn't, you know, there's lots of hospitals in Ontario. We looked at a sample of them. And what we did find is that it is possible for nurses to move around and be hired, even if at their previous employer they were found to have harmed a patient or they were incompetent. It takes a lot to get to remove a nurse in terms of that. They get chances to show their competence. It's not just a one-off incident. And so I think we were surprised that we saw that a nurse who perhaps in a few cases has been deemed incompetent or has harmed patients still is able to work in the system either through, you know, other hospitals or either through agencies. I mean, it's not rampant. I mean, the nurses that work in our hospitals are are competent overall. These are people that slip through within the system and can work, and we think there's more controls needed around this and more exchange of personnel information to be enabled between the hospitals and with the agencies so that the people that are harming patients can't work in the system.
Okay, thank you so much for being with us, Bonnie Lissick, Ontario Auditor General.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, and now I'd like to bring in Marilee Fullerton, who is the Minister of Long-Term Care in the province. Hello there.
Hello, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
So what is your reaction to the deficiencies found in the long-term care sector in the Auditor General's report?
Well, we take any deficiency to heart. We want to make sure that our residents of long-term care are treated with the highest quality care and are treated with respect and dignity. It is an absolute priority of this government to create a 21st century long-term care system that supports our residents. And also we look at our PSWs, our personal support workers, our dedicated workforce staffing in long-term care homes. And there's always room for improvement. And so I really very much appreciate the good work done by the Auditor General to highlight any areas that we can focus more on. But I want to put a context to this, that there are roughly 85 million meals per year served to our residents in long-term care. And so the areas where there are deficiencies that the Auditor General points out, we will be collaborating with our sector, as we have been doing since we started as a ministry a few months ago, to make sure that the communication is clear and open about how we can help them improve with best practices. So this is about the health and well-being of residents, and it's also about making things better for our sector so that we can work collaboratively and use best practices and the best evidence.
Okay.
So the Auditor General's audit has been very helpful.
Okay, but we all know about the shortage of PSWs.
Yes.
And how they don't have enough time to spend with residents. So how do you square the circle if people are being fed late, for example? How do you make that work if there isn't anybody to feed them on time?
Right. And so the concept surrounding adequate staffing, we are looking to build 15,000 new beds and redevelop another 15,000 within the next 5 years by 2023-24. So clearly a staffing strategy is needed. And that is definitely on our radar from speaking to the long-term care home operators for the last several months. And hearing from the public, it's widely known that the staffing strategy is really needed. So we're working on that now, understanding that we cannot build capacity without having adequate staff. So this is key. And the staff, you know, so many dedicated personal support workers and people working in these long-term care homes, I've had the opportunity to meet them, many of them, over the course of the last few months. And I'm really so proud of the work that so many dedicated people are doing day in, day out. Their compassion for our residents in long-term care is extremely appreciated by me and my ministry and government. Can we always do better? Yes, we can always do better. And that's why I appreciate the Auditor General's audit, because it does help to identify in a very real way what we can do to improve.
And how are you going to crack down, for instance, on the use of long-expired food like those eggs?
Well, that's certainly a concern. And we have a rigorous inspection process. It's a minimum of once a year. But certainly any areas that would be highlighted like this will be addressed with our homes. And so there is need of improvement. So we take the safety and well-being of our residents of long-term care extremely seriously, and their well-being is our priority.
Yeah, so but how are you going to do this? I mean, once a year leaves 364 days.
Right, you're absolutely right. But the inspections are a minimum of once a year. So any areas that are highlighted, we will address those areas. The process is rigorous. And I want our long-term care homes to know that we can work together collaboratively in a positive way so that we can address any deficiencies. This is about making things better. It's about making sure that our residents are treated with respect, and our their well-being is our priority. We also have to recognize the staff in long-term care homes are providing very dedicated and compassionate service to those homes and to those residents.
I think that you were on the line listening when I asked the Auditor General about the note she made about nurses who had been fired for incompetence or inappropriate behavior and their ability to get other jobs in the system. And she was talking about more communication. I mean, frankly, when I saw that, the first thing, obviously, that came to mind was Elizabeth Wetlaufer and how she was able to go from home to home. And the Auditor General, you know, mentioned more communication, but I suspect that there's probably an issue with the union and the union rules. How do you see that?
Well, you're touching on Justice Scalise's recommendations, and that was back in the summer. So we're making progress on those recommendations to address the concerns that were raised by Justice Scalise. And I was extremely appreciative at that time of the work that she did on with this public inquiry. And I think that when we look at the role of the staff and the importance of the care that they provide, the Justice Scalise's recommendations are taken extremely seriously. We take those to heart.
And do we have any kind of timeline, ETA, for these things to be corrected?
We're looking at July of 2020 as having a progress report, and we're actively working on that as we speak. So these are really important reports. So the audit from the Auditor General and the Justice Scalise's report, I think these are really important pieces of information, and we need to address as many of the recommendations as we can possibly do, and always look to improve. Our long-term care sector really has not been modernized in decades, and the previous government unfortunately neglected it. It is an absolutely critical part to our whole healthcare system, and for our hospitals to function the way they ought to function. So it's so important for our residents to receive high-quality care. But the long-term care system affects other parts of our healthcare system, too. And I think we have to remember that as we go through the processes of creating a really flexible, responsive, 21st-century long-term care system. I've lived this with my own family. I understand what it is like to be a family member with your loved one in a long-term care home or needing to get into a long-term care home and not being able to access it. So we need people to be able to get the care they need when they need it. They need to get high-quality, safe care that respects the individual, the resident's right, their dignity, and that they are respected and that their families are respected and communicated with. So this is an important time. This is a pivotal point in long-term care, and our ministry is dedicated to making sure that we make the improvements necessary for our 21st century long-term care home system.
Okay, well, we will be following up and look forward to seeing some concrete action. Thank you so much, Marilee.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your interest. Really appreciate it. Thank
okay,
you.
Bye-bye. We've heard from the Auditor General. We just heard from the Minister of Long-Term Care. And she seems to be making the right noises, saying thanks for the heads up on these problems. We're going to work on them. Didn't really hear anything concrete about how that's going to happen, though I must say, big difference. I remember when the Auditor General talked about the accounting under the last government, they did not react that well. So what is the perspective of somebody who works in our healthcare system, the perspective of a doctor? I'd like to bring in Dr. Sean Whatley, who is the former president of the Ontario Medical Association and now the Monk Senior Fellow in Health Policy with the MacDonald Laurier Institute. Hello, Sean.
Hi, Libby. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks.
So what do you make of what you've been hearing? First of all, is there anything in the Auditor General's report that surprised you?
I don't think it's surprising. I always cringe a little bit when someone takes a cold, hard look from the outside, because some things that may be actually healthy in a hospital environment will be brought into the light of day, and people will say, oh, this is really terrible, we need to change this. And I can explain what I'm thinking of when I mention that. But other things, though, were very, very predictable. I mean, you can't have people sitting in hallway beds for days and days and not expect bad things to happen more frequently than we'd like to. So very glad to see the work being done. Some of it, you know, a lot of it not surprising. Some of it is a bit cringeworthy, but for understandable reasons.
Okay, so your first comment was a bit cryptic. What were you referring to?
Yeah, no, I'm glad you... Sorry to be cryptic there. So one of the things that we struggle with in any healthcare environment, but especially in hospital care, when you're dealing with our sickest people, is that bad things will occasionally happen. It's just like in any other high-stakes industry. And you need to have systems in place to deal with those rare bad events. For example, a really sick toddler will die, or an elderly person will fall and get a blood clot and have a terrible outcome. And so really, really horrific things can happen occasionally. And thank goodness they're very, very rare. And I think in the report it says 214 such events. They were talking about never events, which is even another subset of bad things that can happen.
Yeah, but isn't that like operating on the wrong patient and leaving your watch inside a patient? That's a never event.
Yes, then that's exactly. It's a subset. But we need to figure out a way. Number one, we don't want never events to ever happen. Number two, those bad outcomes, patient harm, things happen that should have been preventable. We need to have an environment where people feel safe to be able to speak up when that happens. And we know from the safety literature that if we create an environment where everybody's paranoid of opening their mouth about anything, safety actually gets worse. So on the one hand, we have to draw attention to these opportunities to do better. But at the other hand, we need to do it in such a way that we're actually making these issues come to light more, and in a way where we can fix them in a positive fashion, as opposed to just doing it to shame and blame.
Okay. Some people say that already exists. Do you have any view, and we're running out of time, on this business about nurses fired for incompetence, inappropriateness, being rehired time after time? Just very quickly,
that
please.
That is a tough one. Number one, it's really, really hard to get rid of low-performing staff. Doesn't matter what staff they are in the hospital environment. There are very, very strong unions in place. That's a topic for a whole show. The part about people getting hired again, yes, it does happen. Ideally, though, if you've done good reference checks, the medical community is small enough, nursing community is small enough, that people get known. Having said that, it is possible, if you live and work in one corner of Ontario and you move to another, or you move to another province, that maybe people don't know your background well enough, but usually you can pick that sort of thing up in reference checks.
Okay. I'm sorry. This is a great conversation, but we are out of time. We'll have to pick it up on another occasion.
I would love that.
Okay. Dr. Sean Whatley, thanks.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.